Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Thunder Buddies podcast. I'm Maddie Lee, joined by Joe Masato. After the Thunder's 109-103 win at San Antonio, we were not able to make this road trip, but we both watched it, obviously. And man, it was quite the turnaround from the last time the Thunder played the Spurs.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of bad memories in that building for the Thunder, especially that last time LaMarcus Aldridge had 39.
And the time before that when he had,
and the time of,
56, I think?
It's been bad for a long time. So not counting playoffs, this was the Thunder's first win in San Antonio since Christmas Day 2014, snapped an 8-game regular season losing streak. So as they continue this winning streak, they snapped a pretty bad losing streak, which made it all the more impressive.
Yeah, and it's so cliche to say contributions all around, but really contributions all around. We'll start at the top in that first quarter, which was a fine first quarter for the Thunder, 27-27 by the end of the quarter. And, you know, it's not surprising that Danilo Gallinari had 7 points, but joining him was a rookie.
Yeah, Darius Bazley, and he got started late too. Like, you know, obviously with Gallo back, Darius Bazley's not in that starting lineup anymore. It was from the 3:05 mark in the first quarter to the 1:51 mark, so just over a minute, and he had 7 points, 2 layups, and then to cap it all off, a banked-in 3-pointer.
All in consecutive possessions.
Yeah, like, it was 7 straight Thunder points.
It was wild. That the best part was the banked-in 3. He was very clearly laughing as he jogged back, but that was huge. That was a huge lift for the Thunder at the end of that quarter to get it to a tie game at the end of the period. And yeah, I mean, he's been a guy where, as you'd expect from a young player, he's been kind of streaky with his scoring. And obviously the Thunder always puts emphasis on, well, you have to do the other things. You can't just rely on scoring. He has so many other things that he's good at. Billy Donovan constantly says he's not great at anything, but he's very good at a lot of things that could become elite. And so Thunder's not, you know, harping on scoring for him, but tonight he gave him a really quick boost in scoring all at once.
Yeah, and he also had 3 rebounds. And what he did well is, like, when he got into the lane and even had some misses, like, he would get his own rebound and get a putback. And it's just, he's so long and, like, rebounds really well. So, good first quarter from Darius Bazley. And then in the second quarter, again, like, every quarter had their star. And the second quarter was Dennis Schroeder. The Thunder, the Spurs got out to a 17-0 run from the 11:18 mark to 7:04. Looked like they could bust this thing open. Then Schroeder hits a 3 to stop that run, and that was really a huge shot.
Well, and the thing was, too, he had been scoreless up until that point, and suddenly he drops 10 points. The Thunder gets back into the game. He's, you know, I think he missed maybe one shot in those closing minutes of the period, but other than that was basically flawless, and it was at a time when the Thunder really, really needed it because they won a 4-minute scoring drought.
Yeah. I mean, they really needed it. And, like, it didn't seem like it was going to come from Schroeder because he was, like you said, 0-4 in that first quarter. And then it wasn't just that 1-3. Like, he continued that offense with more scoring. And then, like, the play that stood out the most to me in that second quarter, you've seen so many times this year when Dennis Schroeder kind of does his own thing and picks up a guy full court. Well, he picked up Bryn Forbes full court on the inbound pass and is just sliding his feet, staying in front of Forbes, clearly frustrating him. And then the Spurs get an 8-second violation. So he forced a turnover on the defensive side as well.
Yeah, I mean, remember at the beginning of the season when we podcasted with Barry and Billy Donovan had said something about how great Dennis's defense was. And we were all like, "Oh, I mean, it was fine." And Barry straight up laughed at the fact. Barry, and we'll have to bring, next time Barry's on the podcast, we'll have to bring up Dennis's defense. But he has been very active on the defensive end really all season, and he's been put in a lot of tough spots. We talked about this last podcast, but has been very impressive. I mean, and his height does not do him any favors, and he's making up for it.
Yeah, he's just so quick, and like when Billy was saying that stuff at the beginning of the year, it was kind of hard to believe him based on what Schroeder has done in every other year of his career. I mean, he's just not known as a defensive player, and you know, still, like, offense is his specialty. He's the lead in that, but his defense is, it's been above average, I think. It's fair to say that. Like, you don't feel like it's a mismatch when he's defending an elite guard. Again, just the mentality of, like, wanting to pick up a guy full court. It's like stuff you see in high school and college. Not a lot of guys in the NBA do that sort of stuff.
Right, but it's like it him definitely and Beverly.
Brings a spark. Yeah.
Yeah. And
it's good company.
His career has been interesting on the defensive end because he was more known for his defense beginning of his career than the basic thinking when he became a starter in Atlanta was like, oh, well, he's doing so many other things. Like, that's why his defense has fallen off. And then he got here and was like, he's fine at defense. And then this year, he's somehow tapped into something and has really ramped it up. So, and obviously he's still scoring. Like, he's still playing long minutes. He's still, you know, some, honestly, a lot of games, the Thunder's lead scorer, certainly most of the time, the Thunder's lead scorer off the bench, and has time and time again pulled the Thunder back when they really had no energy and little scoring ability, and tonight was the perfect example of that.
Yeah, and just one more thing on, like, his defense. Yeah. You guys should go back and read Jenny Carlson's piece today in the Oklahoman. She wrote about the three-guard lineup and how that's been so good closing, but especially, like, on the defensive side when and you did a note about this the other day too, like, when you would not expect that group to be that good, and it hasn't just been offense, it's been their defense too.
Indeed. Okay. As we're going through with different players owning each quarter, we get to the third, and that's Shai Gilgeous-Alexander's quarter.
Yeah. This has been, like, the year of career highs for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and he had another tonight. Career high, 15 points in a quarter, and he did it in the third quarter. He just sort of took over. I mean, he shot 5 of 8 from the floor in that third quarter, and I thought, you know, shot the ball well from three. This is what I led my story with, but, like, we've seen him, you know, evolve and try some new things this year. And, like, at the beginning of the year, he sort of surprised me when he made a couple step back threes, and I'm like, okay, like, I didn't expect that from him. And today against LaMarcus Aldridge, he had one of those, like, please, everyone, I'm not comparing him to James Harden, but he had a James Harden style, like, double step back three that clearly looks like a travel, but, like, everyone does it now, where you just, like,
inch back, step back across
two, and it's to get behind that 3-point line when one step doesn't get you there. And he did it against Aldridge. And I was like, oh, like, the step back surprised me, and that double step back really surprised me.
And that shot put the Thunder up after they'd trailed by as many as 14 points in the first half. Mm-hmm. So that was huge. I mean, what more can you say about 15 points in one quarter? Like, and he keeps coming. We know that he's a good scorer. We know that there's a lot of good, like, things that he can do, but he keeps bringing that into, like, more and more clutch, not clutch in the, like, statistical sense where it's 5 minutes with him 5 points, but, like, key moments, key instances when the Thunder really needs him to step up. If that makes sense. Yes.
And speaking of actual clutch time, which you just defined for us, it was Chris Paul. Like, have we anyone ever seen
again
this before? Like 2 nights ago against the Mavericks, it was like the same thing.
Yeah, another double-digit performance in the fourth quarter for Chris Paul, hitting literal clutch shots late in the game, and. Yeah, the Thunder outscored the Spurs 35-27. They hadn't, before that, their highest scoring quarter was the third with 28 points. So really go off, really find that offensive rhythm. And yeah, took over. I didn't expect, even after they had come back and they were fighting and they were in it, I didn't expect it to be as comfortable of a finish. I know 109-103 is still a pretty close game, but like I expected more back and forth in those final minutes, and the Thunder kind of just cruised in.
Yeah, it didn't follow that usual script that we've seen in all of these close games. So Chris Paul's biggest shot was a jumper with 209 left to give the Thunder a 103-93 lead. And that was its largest lead of the game. So like this game had been really close, other than the Spurs running out of that big second quarter lead, it had been close in the second half, and then they pulled away, and then LaMarcus Aldridge comes down, known Thunder killer LaMarcus Aldridge, he hits a three-pointer, you're like, uh-oh, and then next possession, Chris Paul hits another jump shot and just ices the game, and he came into this one. The stat is a little skewed by the amount of clutch games the Thunder have played, more than anyone in the NBA, but he had 91 clutch points coming into the game, which was most in the NBA.
By
a significant margin. And I haven't looked yet to calculate how many of those were actually in clutch time, but definitely added to that total tonight.
Yeah, when you look at the averages, I think I've wrote about this, but he drops down to around like 5 or 7 or something in that range.
Yeah, when it was top 10 for sure.
When it's like per clutch game. But he's also a guy who's not just, I mean, he takes over in the sense that he makes shots when they need him to, but not in the sense where it's like, all right, it's the fourth quarter, Chris Paul's the only guy who's going to have the ball in his hands, you know? Mm-hmm. So he's still sharing the ball. He's just shooting efficiently when they need him to. So yes,
yeah, like
the 91 points coming into clutch points coming into this game, he has an advantage because he's played way more clutch minutes than a lot of guys in this league, but that's still not a stat to brush aside.
Yeah, definitely not, and especially with what you just said, like he's not a volume scorer in the sense that I forgot the whole list, but when you put it together, when you took out the totals and just did per game, clutch points per game, two of the guys at the top were James Harden and Kyrie Irving. Obviously, those guys are like great players in the middle of their primes who their team relies on to take a ton of shots, and the Thunder does not rely on Chris Paul in that way. So I think it's even more impressive that it's not like he's necessarily being asked to do this. He's just sort of taking over in the fourth. Like the other night against Dallas, he had 4 points in the first three quarters. Tonight he had 6 points in the first three quarters. So he's picking his spots, which makes sense. Like it's I'm not saying he's conserving energy for the fourth quarter, but when you're 34 years old, he's picking a good time to take over.
For sure. You mentioned LaMarcus Aldridge, known Thunder killer. It was an interesting role reversal tonight, both in that the Thunder won, but also in that the Thunder was getting some really good mid-range shots. And we've seen them, we've seen those point guards get to their spots, it feels like Chris Paul can't miss from right around that right elbow, and again, tonight, you had him and Dennis Schroeder and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander scoring well in the mid-range. And then you had LaMarcus Aldridge shooting 4-4 from three-point range.
That was, yeah, it was a different LaMarcus Aldridge game. I mean, he just, like, torched the Thunder from the mid-range last game, and that's what the Spurs do. But, like, the Spurs shot the three ball really well tonight, which is a surprise. No, I just looks this up. Them and the Warriors are tied for last in the NBA in three-point makes per game. Now, the Spurs are shooting a decent percentage, but yeah, they were 13 of 31 tonight, 42%. And, yeah, Aldridge, 4 of 4. That's not – I mean, it's kind of crazy how he is, in certain ways, getting even – better at some things at the end of his career.
Yeah, like shooting that three ball. Yeah, because both, I mean, maybe you say, hey, it didn't work as well because both his other games when he really gave the Thunder problems, when he was scoring in the 30s and 50s, he was shooting a lot of mid-range shots. Tonight, you know, was perfect from three, but only gets 22. I think it was a real wake-up call for the Thunder that first game because, you know, they had been really focusing. They were like, oh, well, we're okay with giving up the mid-range. Like, they're still, if you look at the numbers, it's still not as efficient of a shot as, you know, closer to the basket. Obviously, still not as many points as a three. So like, even though they're good at it, it's still not as good as the other two places. So we'll clamp down on those. And Billy Donovan has not really changed his tune, but when you talk to him recently about mid-range shooting, and granted, most of this comes in the terms of offense because they have guys who are shooting really well in the mid-range, but he keeps talking about how, sure, if you look at analytics overall, non-paint twos aren't great shots. But if you can get an uncontested non-paint two, that's a great shot if it's a guy who's taking them who can knock them down. And he said some of that at the beginning of the year too, right? Like, we just want to contest those mid-range shots. But they did a better job tonight of not just letting of contesting those, of not just letting the Spurs run all over them in the mid-range.
Yeah, I thought the defensive performance and game plan was really good. I mean, you look at it, and the two stars, DeRozan and Aldridge, have 30 and 22 apiece. Lonnie Walker, who looks very impressive as a second-year player, had 16, but no one else really did much. Like, they just contained it to that, and even though DeRozan had 30, he was 13 of 25, a lot of shots. I thought Terrence Ferguson, you know, played good defense again. And, yeah, and with Aldridge, he had four threes, and four of his 13 shots were from three. But, you know, Steven Adams, after the last game against Aldridge, said, like, you can't let him get going early. And, like, Aldridge got going early, but I thought Adams did a much better job on him this time.
Yeah, that was the big thing. He got going early, and then no matter, like, I talked to Steven after that game, and he was like, I'm trying my hardest to contest. Mm-hmm. He's just knocking these shots down. And that was very true. Like, it wasn't that at the end of the game, the Thunder wasn't contesting those shots. It was, they were, it just didn't matter by then.
Yeah.
But exactly. They were able, I mean, DeRozan got going in the first, at the beginning of the game, and they were able to slow him down after that. So they didn't, somehow were able to not fall into that same trap with DeMar DeRozan, even though he was able to put up early scoring.
Yeah. The Thunder have won four in a row. They've won eight of their last nine. And I just pulled up the standings. I know it's January. I don't know. I had to just look up the date. I should know that it's January 2nd.
we just celebrated New Year's. It's not been that long.
Celebrated the fact that it was January 1st. But the Thunder. So this was kind of a, you know, interesting game as far as standings go, because the Thunder are seventh, Spurs are eighth. And now the Thunder have a 4.5 game lead on the Spurs. And if you extend that out, they've got a 5.5 game lead over ninth place Portland, who has lost 5 in a row. And like the bottom of the West continues to underwhelm. And I don't know. This is not what we expected.
Playing
way better than everyone expected.
They really are. And as of late, I mean, we haven't even mentioned Billy Donovan was named Coach of the Month, rightfully so, in December, because Thunder were 11-4, I believe.
That's right.
And beating good teams. It wasn't like they were just, you know, beating up on an easy schedule. They played a bunch of, you know, top five, top six teams in the West and lost to Denver. But other than that, played really well and grabbed some wins and were able to move up the rankings after a pretty underwhelming start to the season. I mean, they were playing really close games and outplaying expectations in that sense, but record-wise, pretty underwhelming.
Yeah, in December, they had wins over the Clippers. They had a road win at the Raptors. They had that win against the Mavericks. They had the win tonight against the Spurs. And then you couple that with
some
wins
against... Well,
that wasn't
in December, but... Gotcha.
Oh, golly, the calendar.
It's tough. It's 2020. I still haven't had to, like, write that anywhere, but the next time that I tweet out one of those, like... I do the photo of the court before every game. There's a very good chance that I'll get the date wrong. I'll get the year wrong.
I gotta get control of myself. Okay, yeah, tonight was indeed in January, so this one doesn't count. But
still a good one, and still recent.
You had some of those big wins, but then you also had wins against bad teams, but that were like historic wins, the 26 point comeback, the 24 point comeback, the 3 18 point comebacks.
Isn't great that they were getting down?
No, it's not great, but it just like adds to the drama of the month.
Yeah, it was a wild month. So good job, Billy Donovan. Congrats.
Props,
man.
To Billy. I was kind of surprised when I saw in that release that this was his first Coach of the Month honor, just because there's been good teams that come through here. And then I looked back and there's a lot of Steve Kerr, Greg Popovich, Rick Carlisle, and, you know, Doc Rivers. But it was still surprising that he hadn't won it that much, because it's not necessarily like how good of a coach you are. It's just like how your team performed in that month.
Sure.
First one for him.
It also helps to have like, hey, you weren't supposed to be this good and you are, as opposed to, you know, that first year, that Russell Westbrook, Kevin Durant, and, you know, they're supposed to be winning. So they have to be pretty spectacular for you to point to the coach as being impressive. I mean, I guess you could argue the same for the Warriors, but they're just like bulldozing over people.
Yeah, it's, people, I think Bobby Marks put this out there from ESPN, former executive. He mentioned Billy Donovan in the early Coach of the Year race. And, you know, we've written about Schroeder as far as Sixth Man of the Year. And just all of this to say that, like, their surprising start to the season has them in some of these situations that you wouldn't expect. Also, Dennis Schroeder. James Harden won Western Conference Player of the Month, but Dennis Schroeder was a nominee for that. So
in good company. Can I toot my own horn for a second here?
Of course.
I'm like a little relieved, because at the beginning of the season for our preview, I wrote that story about how this could be a season where Billy essentially shows us his coaching chops, because he's done so well in college, then this is an opportunity to really develop players and show that he's good at that. And I went back and interviewed a bunch of coaches that he's worked with, but in his college years, to make the comparison. And so he's making me look smart here.
Yeah, way to go. Good call.
Thanks. Go back and read that and be like,
so you get paid the big bucks.
Yeah, totally. Let's not mention any of the ones, any of my, look back at my free agent predictions last year. Don't read those. definitely not Mike Muscala. Or or Alec Burks. So
good old Muskie.
I mean, it technically they weren't predictions. I said these are guys that they should look at, but I didn't get any of them right. Or
that's a very hard one to make as well.
Yeah, yeah. And I wasn't saying, hey, they're going to pick up these guys. I was like, these are guys that they should consider who make sense. So I stand by those, but it would have been cooler if I had somehow pegged someone that they got. Or maybe that just maybe they should have signed That's someone right. that I mentioned. God.
Yeah. What are they doing? Not reading everything we write.
Come on, Sam. Just follow my what I'm writing as your path
support
to
support local
success.
Journalism, Sam.
Subscribe and follow our advice.
Yes.
All right. Anything else on this game before we look ahead to what the Thunder has coming in this road trip?
I don't think so.
Do you want to come up with something really quick while I pull up the Thunder schedule?
Yes. Well, this is an interesting road trip, just because I've got the schedule in front of me. So
oh, well, cool. Look at you. I do too now.
Saturday at Cleveland, Monday at Philadelphia, and then a back-to-back Monday, Tuesday at Philly, at Brooklyn. So, you know, you went on that four-game West Coast road trip a few weeks back, whenever the heck that was. So this is like a weird, like, South to Midwest to East road trip.
Yeah, I guess you can say it's... I mean, if you're going to count the West Coast road trip that I did as a West Coast, then you can count this as an East Coast, because...
Yeah, that's true.
It was a little hopping back and forth. Really, the point is, neither was that streamlined. Philadelphia-Brooklyn, though, is a really nice trip, because you can...
Yeah, and this is a shorter trip days-wise than that West Coast one.
For better or for worse.
Yeah.
I guess the West Coast one still had a back-to-back and... No... Oh, no. Oh, it's all running together.
There was that long break before the Denver game.
Yeah, there's a few days break. It's a couple days in between, I believe, Sacramento and Denver. I was there. This is...
I don't know. That was... I have a hard time remembering last decade.
Yeah. Exactly. That was so long ago, the 2010s.
Jeez. I remember them like they were 3 days ago.
Oh, gosh. But yeah, San Antonio, Cleveland. We won't get the Brooklyn that the Nets are supposed to become until next year, but some interesting teams. Not as pivotal in like standings wise as that West Coast or / West road trip, just because it's the East. So it doesn't count for double if you win against a good East Coast team. But
yeah, I'm looking most forward to the Philadelphia game, just because that's the best team on the trip, and that was one of the Thunder's best wins earlier this season. So closing out that series pretty early, see how they respond on the road in that matchup.
Yeah, get the rematch. All right, well, we'll be here after that game and after Cleveland.
We will be here.
And the rest. So thank you for tuning into this Thunder Buddies podcast. Like it, love it, share it with your friends, your family, your pets, your neighbors, your enemies. And please subscribe and get all those same people to subscribe, since we mentioned supporting local journalism. And we will see you on Saturday after Thunder's game at Cleveland.